ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's the November 2018 edition of the Bizarre Briefing. I'm Bryce Castillo, joined as always with Brent Hughes.
Hey, that's me.
And David Rowan.
By process of elimination, that is me. That is I.
That's you. This is our Behind the Scenes podcast where we talk about all the great goings-on, fun stories, interesting anecdotes, tales of lore about the things that are going on behind the scenes at our YouTube/store business.
I'm glad all of the audio listeners could tell that by process of elimination that you were the last one and not that Jeff also is in here.
Right. Well, he could be right here.
Another great visual bit. Jeff's not joining us this week. Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing? It's November. We're actually in November now.
Yeah, it's fall as hell. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's still like 60 degrees outside. It's almost December. Yeah. And it's still like pretty nice.
True. But it has dropped a few times.
And also, that only applies if you're awake during the day.
Well, I mean, I guess that...
Unlike myself.
I would have said that goes without saying, but... present company.
So for me, it's 50, 40 degrees every day. I'm like, okay.
And the rest of us are at the pool during the day.
Yeah.
Our classic
pool parties that we have.
Pool parties. Uh-huh. So we got a whole list of topics here. Let's go down the list. First off, being that we have I don't even know if this is an HQ update. To give a little bit of context, Brian, about six months ago now, almost 5 or 6 months ago, closed on a new property that we're going to use as a studio/warehouse space.
True.
And so it sounds like the warehouse space, that space is getting prepped. I know there's a large there's a video on the Modern Rogue channel that where the guys kind of walk through the property, both the building that's there and some of the land. There's a large studio space that we'll probably be using as our studio. I know that. I think that still needs to have electricians come in and then tear out the walls and redo all the electrical in there.
Right.
But that still needs to happen. We did get sound baffling to sound treat that room.
It's not up yet, but we have it.
We have it. I think we've been waiting because the guys want to do an episode or a video about it.
Well, also the electrical stuff needs to be done before we can actually treat that room.
Because they'll probably tear down the walls, was my understanding. So that's that. And then the other thing is that I understand that a plan has been made to create some sort of steel structure on site to act as a warehouse facility.
It's a plan that has kind of been floated in the past 5 or 6 months. We will see if and when a foundation for said building is poured, and then it will become more of a real thing. But I think
because that's the biggest, most expensive part of the process is laying out the concrete foundation for those steel buildings. Because the part of the reason that idea keeps coming back up is the GM over at the Rusty Mule, where Brian and I sometimes will go on shoot stuff. We just talk to that guy a lot, and the main building that they have there, that inside bar building, is a similar steel structure.
Yeah.
And so he's all like, oh yeah, it's super cheap and they put it up really quick. You just like the... so all that kind of information was sort of been funneling through that channel.
Yeah, I think once that foundation's poured, the building goes up
pretty quickly.
A few weeks, but
mostly prefab.
Mm-hmm. Prefabulous is what that stands for.
For sure. I think within the last month or so, we kind of walked through with a builder who had a lovely Irish accent.
He was
just delightful. And we kind of talked about it. We kind of talked about the warehouse area, and we kind of talked about the old house and how it needs to be modified and stuff. Mm-hmm. The warehouse area is gonna also double as Bonnie's studio.
Okay,
as my understanding,
right? Because she has kind of set up shop in the one space that we use for shooting in there because it's the sound is actually good in there. But the place is not even built, and we're already butting heads on usage rights. But hopefully that stuff gets turned around in the next month. There was a bet between Brian and his co-host Justin Robert Young about when like this studio, this podcast studio would move over to the new place, and the over under was at Christmas, and Brian took the under that this would all be set up before Christmas, which
ever the optimist.
Yes, I was just about to say the same thing.
Well, and it could happen. If that was the number one goal, it could happen.
Can I still get in on this bet? Because I don't think it's going to happen.
Like, on paper, none of this stuff should take a long time, right? The electrician stuff should be relatively quick. The sound treating thing should be a day, maybe, and we're shooting a video.
There's always surprises, though.
There is.
There are.
Yeah.
But there is.
There is, and there are surprises.
Mm-hmm. That's how it do.
And then like, moving the studio stuff should take maybe 2 days, because there are some big pieces. And
the cinder blocks are really heavy.
So this piece is, like, precarious.
Which people can't see on video right now.
Right. Oh, yeah. If you've seen Brian's, like, a concrete backdrop set in years past, it's a bifold. So there's no support back there. It's only being kept up because it's at an angle.
Oh, so this could just collapse on us at any moment is what you're saying.
No, it won't.
And crush us to death.
Well, it definitely won't do that, because you're right. It's not heavy really at all. But it's
shortest episode ever.
But it's big. When it used to be even bigger, because I believe there used to be a third piece before we had rearranged the studio a few years back. And so, you know, this will probably be kind of what the podcast will look like visually in the beginning, until we get some more decoration stuff up. But on paper, that can all happen before December 25th.
Sure.
I don't know that it,
in practice.
I don't exactly know if it will. It could. Like, with Black Friday done, we're on the other side of Black Friday, it would seem like there is a lot of runway.
Yeah. And it's also the start of the season, where
the holiday season and all. Yeah.
Oh, that's what it is. Yes, the holiday season. Correct. That's what it is. Yeah. Hey, speaking of Brian.
Okay.
I'm gonna go catch him now, and then I'll come back. So I know I'm gonna mess up your flow.
Ooh. Okay.
But we only have a narrow window with which to
for you to talk to Brian. Yeah.
So we'll just edit this out, and then I'll just vanish.
That seems unlikely to happen, but okay.
Great.
All right. We'll see David in a little bit here.
But yeah, you also have to consider that, you know, it's going to be, you know, I imagine the room will have to be treated before people get moved in. And I feel like the warehouse might even be a higher priority item, just because once the warehouse is done and built out, then we can stop paying double rent or whatever with the current place that the warehouse is at now.
Because we're going month to month at the existing warehouse, yeah.
Yeah, and so I feel like I'm totally speculating, but I feel like that'll be the priority, and then they'll work on the house, and it'll all probably happen relatively soon together. But
right. It seems like that all could happen at the same time. If the funds are there, right?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully by next episode we have more to talk about progress on this stuff. But I think being in the wake of Black Friday, those wheels are still slowly starting up again.
Right.
So, speaking of Black Friday, Brant.
Yeah.
I saw on Slack that we should be expecting some new babies.
Yeah.
Some children.
Sure.
Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah,
that I've decided to use
in a less paternal description. It looks like we're upgrading to some GH5s,
Panasonic Lumix cameras.
Yeah, so the cameras we had been using before was, we had one GH4, which kind of seemed like it was on the ropes a little bit, and then a handful of GH2s. Mm-hmm. All of which I believe were Black Friday purchases on their own a number of years back, which is how we got so many, because we were like, we need like 4+ cameras.
Right.
And the GH2s were a few hundred bucks each.
Yeah.
So this was a bit more to stomach, but it seemed like a good time to do it with the big problem was the GH4, because it's been acting a bit strange lately. Some visual artifacts, and
some issues with like it not wanting to stop recording, like freezing before stopping recording, which has led to some file loss.
Yes,
as far as we can tell.
Yeah, sometimes everything seems to be going fine, and then you hit the stop record button, and it just locks up, and then doesn't write to the memory card. Which, when we're recording episodes, especially
kind of important
with guests that are coming in from out of town or something, I don't want to be like, "Hey, sorry, we just can't post this episode because we don't have the footage for it." So that's a pretty big problem. And then it's like, well, if we're gonna get one upgrade for that camera, it would be weird to have like a GH5 and GH2s that are, you know, 6 years older or whatever.
What was the thinking behind getting, because we're getting three GH5s, right?
Right.
What was the thinking behind getting three GH5s versus, say, GH4s, and keeping with the GH4 that we have?
Right. So, well, the big impetus to any kind of upgrade here was to kind of push off that problematic GH4 we have. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like it would be three cameras regardless. But you're right. It could have been three GH4s. But Brian's suggestible. And it's like, I know that if I gave Brian the choice of like, well, you could get three GH4s or you could get three GH5s, he'd be like, let me get three GH5s then. But also that just like future proofs us a little bit more. It's, you know, there are plenty of features in the GH5 that are kind of nice quality of life stuff.
Yeah, my understanding is it's got some like in-body stabilization options.
Yeah, there's some really nice stabilization. We could have gone with the GH5S, which is kind of like a half model up, but they're quite a bit more expensive and the stabilization is worse, but they have some other nice things. The dual SD card slot is kind of nice because then we could just like
pop in two
and just kind of keep going for a while.
Wow.
Which would be cool. There's a handful of things, and it, you know, it's still Micro Four Thirds, so it's not like a nice full frame sensor or anything, but it does generally have quite a nice image.
And does it have a full size HDMI port?
I'm not sure. It's a good question.
It has a USB 3 port. Which can go to full-size HDMI. Interesting. Very cool. Well, do we know about when those should arrive? Because it sounded like he bought them on Sunday or so.
Yeah, probably this week, because I ordered some stuff on Monday, and that's coming in on Friday.
Oh, okay. Very cool. And that was all through B&H?
Yeah.
Very cool.
TruthV7 asks, is there any custom firmware stuff for them? I mean, probably, but not going to touch that for quite some time. We had custom firmware in the GH2s, which theoretically made them better, but really we just, like, in my experience, it's like we didn't use the high bitrate stuff because we only have so much storage, and we run through like a couple hundred gigs per shoot anyway. And it's like, oh, let's just double that just because is like not something I was interested in. But also,
though, if we're going to an all 4K setup, we'll need to re-up on memory cards and probably like move to 4K workflows in cases where we haven't already.
Sure.
Because I know like none of the Scam School stuff or any of the like product or giveaway, you know, those templates and graphics aren't built for 4K necessarily. Mm. Not that it would be very difficult to convert them, but that work needs to also be done.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that because we'll talk about this a little later, but we're working on some new stuff, and that reminds me that we'll need to be 4K focused.
But yeah, with the firmware stuff, like also we relied pretty heavily on being able to see how much recording time we have left.
Yeah.
But with the custom firmware stuff, it just has no idea.
Right. So on the GH2s, well, and it's I feel like it's proportional, but it's still work to figure it out, right?
Right.
So, like, normally it'll say, like, oh, you have about 11 and a half hours on this card, which is not right. But you also can start to tell, especially when it gets really low, that it starts counting down in, like, 5-second chunks.
Right.
And so, you know, like, 11 hours means about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And so when it's down to 5 or 6, then we're about halfway there. You can kind of suss it out, but it's
not random, but it's not right.
Right. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be cool to go to all high end cameras. The one thing I'll really be looking forward to is the GH2s don't have this, but the GH4 does, which is the focus peaking.
Yeah.
Where it'll light up part of the screen that it believes is in focus, which is really, really helpful for, you know, when we're doing on, you know, all of our shooting is so like off the cuff that like the last thing that's helpful is like dealing with focus.
Yeah. And especially when we are using the GH2s, like the little screens are so tiny and it's tough
and
to.
They're old screens. Some of them have ghosting. Some of them are just not good screens anymore. Mm-hmm. So,
and you also have to get like just the right viewing angle. Or else things look kind of funky.
Yeah. Do these use the same batteries as the GH4?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So we can kind of...
So we've already got
three
GH4 batteries or so.
Right.
Somewhere in there.
Probably wouldn't hurt to get a few more of those, though.
Yeah. Ben points out the stabilization is what pushed the Turbo Cult people over the edge for the GH5. And yeah, especially if you have a lens that has stabilization with it as well, then you get like double stabilization, which is super nice.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see both how the handheld and like any double stabilization would look. And I know this is not the best direct anecdote, but I know that I was looking at phone gimbals because we were doing some traveling stuff, and I was thinking, oh well, if we're doing traveling and if we do any broadcast stuff, it'd be easier to have a gimbal that, you know, can follow us or whatever versus like trying to handhold or do a selfie stick or something. And one of the issues, even on like the nice DJI ones, was like, oh well, the gimbal will give stabilization, but the iPhone also has stabilization that you can't turn off, and they will actually fight against each other sometimes, where you'll get kind of a jelly sort of effect is how it's been described. There are some examples of it. It's not the worst thing, especially if you're talking about like a mobile broadcast stream or just anything you're shooting on your phone, basically. But it would be interesting to see how that double stabilization works on pro level gear like this.
Right. Well, I mean, when it comes to something like lenses that are stabilized, they actually communicate with the camera and they work in unison.
Oh, nice.
So it actually gives you a much better result.
Oh, cool.
Than something like that. But it has to be the right kind of lens, you know.
Oh, sure. Like native GH mounts and
Actually Panasonic lenses and stuff. Or a lens that can talk to it with a smart adapter, which we don't have any of.
Right. So that's cool. I'm excited for those. Speaking of shooting stuff, it was the weekend before, right? We shot, did we really shoot 5 episodes of this?
Yes, we did.
5 episodes on EMT. It's not EMT training. I don't know that we could get a, I don't know if we could get away calling it training.
Rapid
response information.
Yeah.
Cause we're not going to get certified by watching it. Our guests were very clear about letting us know that, you know, they're there in an unofficial capacity from their very real jobs as medics and on scene EMTs. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit about that, because I had thought we only got 4, but I know we shot a long time both days.
Yeah, so I can actually pull up the list real quick. We shot 5 episodes. One was Bleeding Control.
Okay.
One was the Heimlich and choking responses.
Oh, right.
One was CPR. Mm-hmm. One was treating burns. And the last one was being the first responder on the scene of a car wreck.
Oh, right. What to do as a citizen, as a first responder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. It's something we've gotten a lot of suggestions for over time. Mm-hmm. And it was the kind of thing where, you know, we kind of always wanted to do it. We just needed to find the right people to kind of carry us through it, because obviously Brian and Jason are not qualified to to wing their way through that subject.
What do you mean?
You know, anybody who's seen our show kind of knows what they're in for on
a
that.
A perilous relationship with health.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah, those were pretty nice and informative, and our guests, I've forgotten their names now, were really good instructors in terms of like really knowing their stuff, mm-hmm. and giving a lot of good information.
Right. Yeah, it was cool, and they were like really short, simple, concise episodes. Mm-hmm. Brian indicated that they would be put out as like a week long thing, like another themed week,
right? Like the Desperate Defense stuff. That sort of right. That seemed like did that idea originate on one of those shoot days? Because I did not think that was necessarily the plan going into it. But I also am not always up to date on
right
that planning.
I'm not sure when that idea originally popped up.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that's kind of the way that those leaned, which I think is viable. They were relatively quick episodes. Mm-hmm. It's just I know that whenever that week comes along, it's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be a tough week for me, but doable. Mm-hmm. We just have to find the right week for it.
How do you feel about doing a week of that versus say? Like, because when we've done the drinks episodes, we would go and shoot like four of them at a time.
Right.
And then intentionally space those out so mm-hmm. that we're kind of hitting the same topic over a longer period of time rather than stretching it out all into one week.
Sure.
Though, on the other side, just to finish out the context here, when we did the Desperate Defense stuff, that seemed to go well because there were so many new videos mm-hmm. over the course of a week.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I definitely see the value in both approaches. Mm. And I think it kind of depends upon the strengths of the episodes. You know, something like Desperate Defense, I feel like if we had spaced that out over a long period of time, mm-hmm. it would have been really unsatisfying because each episode didn't feel like complete to me. It didn't feel like oh, this is like its own standalone thing and makes sense in that capacity.
Okay.
And they all sort of depended upon each other to make sense for context. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like episodes with Trevor, some of our cocktail videos, those can be their own kind of isolated standalone videos. And doing a bunch of them back to back to back would just feel like a bit overkill and oversaturate my yeah. palate. I think.
Do you have a sense of what would be better for the rapid response in a vacuum? Because it sounds like we're on track to do a week of them. Like, do you feel like that's the best? Like, if you had to make that decision right now,
I think if I were a viewer, I think the rapid response stuff would work best in a themed week.
Okay.
I think it will play better as a themed week than Desperate Defense did because each one of these, like these are more uniquely different from each other than Desperate Defense were.
That's true. Because Desperate Defense was just a lot of like, here's something that's probably around you. Here's how you can wield it. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of faux wielded it against a target or whatever.
Yeah.
Where
and they're like, that seems like it works,
hey,
I guess.
Here's a grade.
Yeah.
Where this is like, all of it is good substantive information. And honestly, it is the sort of stuff that you could have taken all five of those episodes and done them into like one like long EMT episode.
Mm.
Because it is all varied and good information. And so putting it all out rather piecemeal, but close close together does seem like a good use of that. Each one gets its own time to breathe. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like squished in a longer video between everything else.
I think something like The Desperate Defense would have actually probably worked better as one video like that, yeah. where it's like, oh, here's a bunch of ideas we're going to try back to back to back. And I think we actually talked about it around that time of like, oh, do we split these up or do we do it? But it was still kind of like an experimental format for us. So we're still mm-hmm. kind of figuring out, well, let's try and split it up and see if that makes sense. Yeah. I think this rapid response stuff. Would probably work a little bit less better if it were one big video because it just wouldn't have that focus, really. It would just be focused on these are like emergency services things. Yeah. But it would cover so many different aspects of that, and that's such a huge topic mm-hmm. that I think, you know, having this pinpoint focus in each episode works better.
On a similar topic, before we go to the next thing on our list, I don't know if you ever got into like John Boyes's videos. He is a video. What is he? The head of SB Nation's like creative labs, but he's done these really great videos on like he did 17776, which was a multimedia science fiction story about what football looks like in 15,000 years.
I've maybe heard about that.
And so he's also done like Pretty Good, which is a story about sports stories that are pretty good, and Chart Party, which is all like stat heavy stuff. But he's done a new project that's coming out this week called Fighting in the Age of Loneliness. And that is a similar thing where it's kind of in these like 20 minute chapters, and there are five of them, so they're doing one Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, this is not a weekly project. This is something that he's been working on with Felix Baumgarten, I believe, from he's like one of the Chapo Trap House guys. In any case, this just reminded me of this because it is a very similar thing. This is all about kind of MMA and the history of MMA and how it's like reflected the global global temperature across these past decades. Mm-hmm. And it's a video where it probably could have been an hour plus video of all of the stuff in one, but it's also been split up into five pieces and are coming out one right after the other. It's interesting to see I guess I have lost my initial thread here, but it's interesting to see other channels do this sort of thing, to like make an event out of a bigger project like this.
Yeah, and I guess a little bit less of a direct comparison, but sort of a similar thing. Danny O'Dwyer over at NoClip,
right.
Every now and then he'll have a video game documentary where it just like there's just too much, so he'll break it up into a couple parts, and he'll kind of have certain parts focus on certain aspects of the game development.
Yeah, like it looks like this Warframe one is kind of in parts.
Yeah, he's done.
Oh no, these are like trailers.
Yeah, he's done a couple that like the full thing is broken up into parts, and he's also done some where it's like, oh, this is kind of its own standalone project that is about the same game that we shot at the same time, but it's sort of focused on very different aspects.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to see people, particularly in the YouTube space, kind of explore these different formats and these different ways of presenting that kind of information. Because, with something like a movie, there are very traditional ways of presenting information. And then with television, there are very traditional, established ways of presenting information. Mm-hmm. And they're all structured there's like a homogeny with the way that all that stuff is structured.
Right.
With some exceptions, I'm sure.
But for various reasons, both structural and technical,
yeah.
There are generally well set guidelines on kind of what a TV script should look like, mm-hmm. and where it should break up. Yeah.
And YouTube, there's so few rules about how you can present something and it resonating with audiences. So it's really cool to see people just kind of get loose with it.
Yeah. Okay. On our next topic here. So Brant, it sounds like you're getting maybe a little bit more time.
Yeah, so I don't know how much I have to say about this, but I would do like contract side work for like some corporate team building stuff.
It's freelance stuff.
Yeah, and I quit doing that within the past month or so.
Oh wow,
maybe
nice.
A month and a half, and so I could focus a little bit more on Modern Rogue. And it wasn't like super regular work. It was kind of occasional work, and it was nice to get a little bit of extra money in.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I started that job 3 years ago or so, and you know, it was good to fill in the paycheck a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, it was just like it really sucked.
I won't share any details, but I know that a lot of the times you've told me stories about them asking stuff from you and like dealing with deadlines and other people shooting stuff was always kind of a little bit of a hassle.
Yeah, it was just like not great communication, and then also I was working with a bunch of footage that was shot by people who don't shoot footage for a living,
yeah,
or don't own cameras,
right.
So it's just like every once in a while there's a real joy when you can tell that somebody gets it or somebody cares. Mm. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm so excited to work on this because like they're working with me and I love it. But a lot of times it was just like, oh, I can tell you are just doing this because somebody else asked you to, and you are not like, you don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And that just makes my job worse. And then also there was this weird trend towards the end with my last couple of projects where they were like, yeah, so just instead of us sending them a green screen, we're just going to have them stand in front of a white wall.
No.
And it's like, I can't do anything with that, because if I key out the wall, I'm keying out their skin as well. And
yeah,
it was just like, it was a whole thing. But I don't do that anymore. And then also with, we talked last month about Scam School Remix being off my plate because
right.
Jeff's taking that over. And so there are still some weeks where it's like, oh, this is a huge episode or there's a ton of stuff to do. Like with the Evan and Caitlin video or the Halloween stuff where we kind of packed in more episodes than usual, which, you know, eats up all of that free time that I now have. But I'm finally starting to get a little bit of breathing room, which I haven't had in like 5-6 years or something. So it's nice. And especially with all of like the work of, oh, nobody's really like keeping up with the Patreon because nobody feels like it's really their job to do anything with it. Mm-hmm. So I kind of end up falling on that or doing like community management stuff on YouTube or doing stuff like shirt designs for Patreon or doing like any other given number of things that just kind of, it's nobody's job really to do it. So it just, sometimes it gets done, sometimes it doesn't. This extra time has allowed me to make sure that some of that stuff gets done more reliably.
Mm, that's good. I know there was like there was a solid like month or so where Jason was like, oh, I'm gonna post a lot on the Patreon,
right?
And Brian would always say he would, but he like Jason actually did it a couple of times.
Yeah, Brian.
Brian probably has answered comments. Maybe
Brian has not made one entry on Patreon
as a post.
That is not a lens.
Oh sure, but lenses.
But
whatever.
Those don't really matter past the 24 hours after they're done.
Right. It's. Yeah.
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 It's kind of incredible that anybody puts up with us at all. And some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people will be like, hey, well, the one thing I'll say, if you subscribe to a Patreon and you say, mm-hmm. I am done with this Patreon, maybe it wasn't what I expected it to be, like that's totally cool.
Right.
Once you pull back your pledge, Patreon has a survey and they're like, hey, what's the reason you're pulling your pledge?
Right.
And sometimes people say, well, the creator just wasn't engaged like I expected. That's fine. But if you feel that way, please reach out to the creator and maybe they can engage more like you expect.
Yeah.
Because so often I see those like exit feedbacks and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this because you're not like communicating sure. with me beyond this.
So I will say one thing is that those Patreon exit survey, the list, the database, the table it gives you of the exit surveys, you have to like avoid that at all costs because
sure.
the Patreon page just shows you everything through the end of time. So I've gone onto like the Chord Killers one, and a lot of I think the ones that I've mostly seen have always been like, oh, my financial financial sure. situation changed.
That's always like the safe exit survey right. response where you're like, nobody can fault you for that.
But anytime like it's like a black hole, right? You start scrolling and you're like, oh, okay, that's a thing. But it's very easy to go back like way far in time because you'll scroll and then you'll be like, I don't like the way Patreon implemented this change that they did 2 years sure. ago. And you're like, this is not even relevant feedback anymore. Mm-hmm. So don't give just arm's length on that webpage because
sure.
But it's also indicative of kind of the way people engage with stuff online, which is just, hey, I don't have to be watching this thing, and so I won't. And mm-hmm. it really it isn't up to anybody to fix the way a creator does something. I mean, I think there are instances of people being really engaged with like a show or a channel or something where they'll be like, oh, hey, you know, it would be great if you did this or change this, whatever. But most people don't. Most people are fickle, and most people don't leave comments. And I mean, think about like I could go to the Modern Rogue page now. Like the Absinthe video has 251,000 views, right? That's pretty right. good for a 4-day-old video,
right?
How many comments are on there? And right, not 250,000, but 800 comments, right? So it's just a weird thing, right? Most people don't want to say anything at all.
Sure.
And that is I don't think it's controversial to say that's pretty universal. Mostly because I think people also expect that from like TV or radio, right? Like if you like a TV show, maybe you tweet that you like it, but most people won't. Most right. people will watch it or they'll stop watching it. And who are they going to tell that to? I don't know. It's just weird the way, because we want people to engage and tell us what they want. But
I'm just saying, life lesson, if you would like to enact change somewhere,
oh gosh,
effective communication with somebody who can enact change is a good way to go about it.
Sure. I mean, it's certainly better than I think the Patreon exit survey is a different thing, but I know when we get comments on some of the videos, it's like, oh, why, you know, I'm going to unsubscribe because you're, well, whatever. Uh-huh. It's like, well, okay. Bye. I'm like, no one person is like the person that we're going to change everything for. Mm-hmm. Because they're saying they're going to leave otherwise. Mm-hmm. Like the constructive criticism and like feedback is good information, but also an understanding that tone and the way that it's presented is also key because we're human, right? Mm-hmm. Like comments are not
most
in a vacuum.
Of us. I wasn't going to bring it up, but just real quickly.
Okay.
Man, people are feisty on the internet.
Yeah.
There was this dude who I was talking to on the internet. He was leaving comments and he was like, oh, it's so disgraceful. You do the basic minimum research and you lose all credibility with each video. And I was just, you know.
Stop watching.
Yeah. Well, we got into that a little bit. But, yeah. You know, it's like, eventually we got to a point where You know, I was like, I kept prodding him because I was like, that's not what our show is about. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we do a little bit of research here and there, some episodes more than others, but like that information is not what this show is. And eventually we got to a point to where he was like, yeah, you know, I'm frustrated at work and probably drank too much or something. And it's like, you see all of these people who like have this built up pressure from their mm-hmm. personal lives mm-hmm. that they don't have like a healthy way to vent that mm-hmm. With the things that are actually bothering them. So they go to a YouTube video or something and then they get like a minor frustration there and they're like, oh, this is a way that I can get all that out of me. Right. And so they just like really unload in a way that's not healthy and is toxic and abusive. And man, I just have like, I consider myself an incredibly empathetic person, but I just have such little empathy for that situation because I just fundamentally don't understand. Like for me, and admittedly, I have fewer built up frustrations in just my personal life. You know, I've got, mm-hmm. I'm sure I've got a streak of nihilism in me, but that doesn't like, you know, rise up in me in the same way that these people probably are dealing with.
Okay.
And it's like, when I watch a video and I get frustrated and upset, because I feel like I feel those same emotions that they're feeling right before they engage. But for me, the pressure release is closing the YouTube video. It's like mm-hmm. it's like distancing myself from the thing that is bothering me just like makes me feel so much better. And I wonder if it's just like they just don't have that like conflict resolution or mediation experience in any way. So they don't understand that what they're doing isn't actually helping them in any way.
But also remember that it's a numbers game, right? Like that one person did that instead of the 100 people who did what you who just turned it off and went about their day.
Sure.
You know, like the number of people who will engage on any given thing is like a subset of the people who will watch or like just consume the thing, right? Like we get that with the podcast. I think I've talked about this on the show sometime far in the past, but like, you know, we live stream Brian's podcasts on Twitch. And so, you know, we get pretty good live numbers, especially nowadays, right? We can get a solid 300 or so people watching Night Attack on a Tuesday night. But also, Night Attack gets downloaded by almost 10,000 people. And so the percentage there, the people who engage and really help the show and you know, engage outside of the show and all that is but a representative fraction of everybody else who chooses to like enjoy the thing in with equal weight, right? Mm-hmm. Like every view is a view.
Yeah, and I know that this is like definitely a vocal minority kind of situation.
Yeah.
I constantly see these things and like my gut reaction is like, oh, this person is broken, because I like fundamentally have a hard time getting on the same level of them and just like really understanding where they're coming from. And it's just like, I guess it's just like a weird internal conflict for me to not be able to understand them.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And
I just don't, yeah. I don't know what to do about it other than say, hey, you idiot, you're wrong, but like phrase it better.
Right.
Yeah. I really don't know. Some days I'm just like,
I also delete a lot of those comments.
Well, yeah. Like some days I'm just like, I don't know why we choose to engage with, like, especially YouTube comments in particular, like why we engage with those at all. I know that, you know, it is uncommon for large channels to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, especially when
there's like, a reason,
but there's a reason, right? Is because at some point it's just, it's a lot of people and it's not even, it's a lot of people for one person, but it's not a lot of people relative to, say, the size of the video.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes hard to manage. And at some point, I just think, well, just let them do what they're going to do.
Sure. For me personally, it's a thing of like, because so many channels and so many community spaces don't properly engage and enforce people who leave comments like that, there's like this really unchecked attitude and behavior where it's like nobody's holding them accountable to what they're actually saying. And I feel like so much harm is done from that, you know, neglect. And even if it's just me saying like, hey, you idiot, stop doing this, like reapproach this from a different angle, then at least even if that conversation skews out of control, which pretty rarely happens, but maybe every once in a while, and it's like, okay, well, this thread is just toxic and I have to get rid of it, even in those situations, at least there was somebody there to say, hey, what you're doing isn't right, you should reconsider what you're doing. And it's just like so much of the internet dialogue is don't feed the trolls, don't like just block everybody, which I think is really useful tools for like personal health, for just saying like by being on this platform, that does not mean that, you know, I should be expected to be abused. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, those people who are hostile and toxic, if they don't have anybody pushing back against them, mm-hmm. then it's like, how do they even begin to correct their own actions?
But it's not your responsibility to fix anybody.
No, but it is my responsibility as somebody who has a platform to make that platform a safe environment for people who have been there over time and newcomers. And
right.
You know, it might not be necessarily my responsibility to change that person, but it is my responsibility to make sure that that space, that YouTube comment space, which is like almost laughably known as such a horrible place for discussion, it is kind of my responsibility to say that, oh, this isn't like a toxic breeding ground for hate speech and shit like that.
Sure. Well, and I don't think those two things are the same. I'm
right.
Like, and I'm not trying to make that a binary.
There's like a middle ground, but there is a little bit of overlap in that.
Like, if someone's being awful, like, I think I tend to, like, especially whenever it comes up with any moderation stuff, I do tend to be very forgiving or like the second chancey kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, at a certain point, you have to say, you know, I'm going to tell you you're being an asshole, and then I'm going to eject you because I can't fix you. You're not going to change, and this is not your space to work that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is an equally valid step towards making a space less toxic versus like trying to reason with, you know, I'm the figurative everybody, because not literally everybody, but you know, I don't know. But Brian has done a lot less of this lately. There was a period like earlier this year where he was really proud of whenever he would write snappy or like huggy. I'm gonna give you a hug because I'm the customer service.
Right.
But at some point, you can't make that your job, and you can't be spending, like, there's only so much you can dedicate towards trying to fix people. It's a very precious amount of time, and using it on strangers on the internet seems like one of the worst investments of time I can think of.
Also, text-based communication lends itself to being, I think, a little bit more harsh. Yeah. Than you get on the phone with that person, also, the same person, and you'll be like, oh yeah, what's up, I'm back. you get on the phone with that person and no, but I just think maybe you should have done a little bit more, you know, look at like the tone completely changes. But when you can text and just even in Slack, like I notice I'll read something that I wrote and I'm like, that was really like direct. You could probably take that as very like to the point or something, like, and less nuanced, just because the medium, I think, lends itself to that. Whereas if you talk to somebody in person, it doesn't really happen that way.
There's a dehumanization element to all of it. Especially just very text heavy mediums like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's no tone, right? I mean, well, you can try to communicate a tone in the text, but there's no audio tone. There's
Yeah, and it's doubly separated when you're talking about something like YouTube comments, where most people assume that this is going out into the void and nobody's going to read it
anyway, right?
And mm-hmm. you're not even specifically addressing a person. You're just kind of posting it out there on a web page somewhere,
right. Hoping someone likes it and validates your point. The I wonder if YouTube could, with their massive AI brains, detect mm-hmm. what type of message you were about to post, and then you click to post it, and it's like, are you sure you want to post that? Are you sure you want to own this comment? And then maybe not.
I'm sure they could, because there is auto detection stuff for flagging
inappropriate comments. Yeah. I think so, but I also think YouTube will. I think they're playing a long game of phasing out the importance of comments. I mean, you use the mobile apps, and if you're trying to get into any sort of commenting stuff, it's like on the phone, you have to scroll past every suggested video to get to any of the comments. Mm-hmm. It on the iPad, the way you do comments is really weird. The TV versions, clearly they're not going to be anything for if you're watching on a TV or a set-top box. I think that YouTube knows that just the comments are not good places for building community. Like I think the best version of YouTube still can't be the best version of YouTube comments can't be a community space still. Mm-hmm. I think that those spaces will better flourish off of YouTube, and I think YouTube understands that. At least that's how I read it.
Following the lead of news organizations that have also stopped putting comments on their articles,
They switch to just Facebook, make people
Right. You have to
another platform that's not problematic at all.
Right. Yeah. That's.
But it is the same thing, right? It's there is a purge, almost 10 years ago of hey, everyone's getting rid of comments because you guys are just fucking awful. Mm. So.
Every now, it's unfortunate because every now and then, someone will write something in that space that really adds value,
yep.
Or in the case of a journalistic sense, corrects the story, now you can't.
That stuff is coming back, especially, I think, partially because Reddit is still a big thing, and Reddit's main goal is sharing links with people and creating a separate comment system for anything.
Hey, wait a minute. This guy said he made $5,555 a day working at home.
Oh, man.
Can we just inquire further?
I just want to click all of his links.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're not going to solve it here today, though.
One last note.
Okay.
Since January, February, March, since the end of March, I've deleted about 850 comments.
Sounds like a good number of comments.
Yeah. But you have
that's one
have
video's them. Worth of comments.
I have them. I log them all because I need things to be... I need those actions to be held accountable. So it's all my bans and all my removed comments are there. Mm. And there's some really bad stuff in there.
Yeah, it seems like there's sort of a three or four themes.
Yeah.
Okay.
They come in waves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Brant.
Yo.
Oh, actually, because we have David here. Sorry, I'm gonna whiplash
double
you
back.
A little bit.
Okay.
David.
What's up?
Since the last episode, Houdini Cell finally released.
Houdini Cell came out. This is doing better for us than any other puzzle box in the history of the world. In the history of scam stuff.
The world of scam stuff.
Yeah, people are loving this. And we are doing extremely well on sales. And now we're going to do our best to get everyone's to them in the next 2 or 3 weeks because we realize a lot of these are gifts.
Can we tell the story of what happened as far as supply, or is that stuff still being kind of worked out?
Which
in
particular
terms of, it being so popular meant that we ran through the supply that we would have for say before Christmas really really quickly.
Yeah, well we thought we would probably. Because it's a higher end puzzle box, so it's more expensive. It's got more stuff in it, so we thought maybe we would sell less. Yeah. So we had a number that we prepared to be ready to fulfill, and we sold three times that number.
Yeah.
So
which is a good problem to have, but also not always a problem you can solve.
Right, and so then it was a scramble to get everything together to make those the other two thirds of that of that total quantity. And I think we're going to be able to do it. So I'm excited for that. We might send out like a little email to everybody and just go, hey, do you need this by Christmas? Or is it okay if we like we'll give you the same number. Because there's a number Jackknives set. We'll give you the same number. But for the box itself, that's actually the thing that slows things down the most is the actual physical wooden puzzle box. Mm-hmm. So we might send out something that says, hey, if you don't need it by Christmas and you're okay with having someone else get the box itself by Christmas so that they can be happy, let us know. Click this link. I don't know. Post a YouTube comment. And then, because we just want to make sure that everybody who is getting these as gifts, even though we have said back order, shipping in mid-December, ideally that is no later than like the 15th so everybody domestically at least can get theirs by Christmas.
Yeah, even would still be cutting it kind of close on the 15th?
Probably, most of these are going priority mail, The 15th should be there in time. Here and probably even in Canada, but actually the Canadian Post office is on strike, I think. So
no Christmas there.
Christmas is canceled.
On strike in Canada, sorry.
Canceled Canadian Christmas. 2018.
But it's good that it's doing well and hopefully we're able to serve everyone to their satisfaction, especially because it is such a big, like Brian, I remember a few months ago, Brian was telling me like everything that came in the box. And I was like, this is a lot of stuff. This is way too much stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not the numbers guy, man. So if it makes sense, it makes sense.
It's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a heavy box. It's like 2 pounds.
Yeah.
And then there's also structural considerations to take into account. So we've improved that. Cause each one is handmade and hand glued and, you know, some of the ones that were sent in that first batch, just like that box got dropped. And so we had to see which ones we could just repair with a dot of wood glue, which is fine because they're wood glued together anyway. So it's not like we're doing anything.
It's made
wasn't
out
done
of wood.
Right.
So,
but a few of them had to go back. And so now we've got a replacement shipment that just came in. Yeah. So we're doing well on it. And I think it's going to do well into next year as well. Yeah.
I will say one of the boxes, which I don't think got sold out to anybody, but the box that I used to like shoot this promotional video for the cell. So when I shoot these like fancy B-roll intros for like the product and the puzzle boxes especially, I'll usually be in the warehouse for like 3 or 4 hours just getting a ton of everything. So I have a lot of coverage and a lot of B-roll, especially when there are like a lot of products in it. Well, I was doing this motif of like the box kind of being on like a gangplank, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's suspended up and he's locked in the box and, you know, is he going to get out?
It's a Houdini thing.
It's a Houdini thing. Because you were there the first time I dropped it. I was like, hey, David.
Yeah, these things are solid.
They'll sustain a drop.
I was like, oh, good.
And then,
is it this shot that was the actual breaking moment?
No.
The one at the very end where it like falls off.
So at the very end,
that right there, yeah,
it falls off, which is no. But I was able to make that shot because I dropped it a second time, and it broke kind of along the seams.
Oh, and then you're like, why not drop it a third time?
Well,
I didn't.
Well, I don't drop it. It's the way it's set up.
It just looks like you were filming it from a distance, and then it fell over.
Right. Like what actually happened was it was already disassembled in this shot, but I just shook the plank right before this cut, and it gives it the look of exploding or popping open.
Nice. It'll shook the plank.
But yeah, so you can tell on that first frame, like it's already like broke. So
we still have that one. We didn't ship it out to anyone.
Right. It's a good puzzle though. I've looked through.
Thank you. Someone appreciated my selection of the number 42.
Oh, for the for the vanity, the one that we used. Yeah.
The jackknife. Also, I think, and we did ship about 42 to somebody. So somebody did get that one.
Oh,
and
nice.
And we do sell a jackknife lockpick set by itself. It's just not
numbered and
the numbered
edged
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Black Friday, How was Black Friday, David? I think it was good.
It wasn't. I mean, last year I think was great. This year I would say it was good, but then we did a thing where we did Black Friday in May.
Right.
So yeah, if right. you take both of those Black Fridays together, it's excellent.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's only so much. If somebody, let's say, wanted to get the book test at the lowest price, there's a good chance they did that either last November or in May.
Or in May.
And right. so to even have a decent showing on Black Friday this year, plus the fact that we just showed everyone this Houdini sale a few weeks prior, which right. which is kind of a big buy.
And then that did so well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're satisfied with how we've done on Black Friday.
I had reason to do this over the past 72 hours, but I was looking through and making a list of a lot of the videos that we do that we've made over the years, and I think it's not controversial to say that like we've had less new product releases also.
Well, that's the second part, is that if you have Black Friday in May and then between say May and November there aren't a lot of new product releases, then everybody who participated in May doesn't kind of have a lot to choose sales. From right?
right
and so I think 2019 is probably going to be the year of, I'm just going to say it here, 19 products in 2019.
Ooh.
Okay, that's
19 and 19. That's what we're going to do.
That's not a bad number. That seems like a pretty reasonable number.
I think we can do it. Yeah, that's what, about 2 1 month, 1 the next month. Does that work out?
Yeah,
that'd be 18. Right. So yeah,
yeah,
one and a half products a month. It's gonna,
but I was just going through these old videos and I was like, man, John was like really doing like a new product like every two
in 2015
or every yeah. 2 weeks. Yeah.
2015 is kind of the craziest year for the company because yeah. not only, I mean, yeah, that was going on, and it's pretty much the metric that we use to measure all other things that we do relative to whatever happened in 2015. Yeah. But I will say that we are on a path to do about 95% of what we did in 2015 with this limited set of product releases.
Yeah.
So
oh,
I
wow.
think that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's really strong.
Instead of having so 2015 was more of like a steady, moderate, you know, revenue stream,
right.
whereas the strategy for 2018 was basically feast or famine. It was
big,
a few huge spikes, and then sort of coasting.
Thing. Yeah. yeah. Well, very cool. I'm glad Black Friday. One of the things we did a Black Friday video on the Scam School channel, and the Scam Saturday video. So this video was only like 3 minutes long, and I ended up having to cut a bunch of stuff to keep it really short, including a little bit of the narrative that this would be. That we're very close to moving warehouse locations.
Mm-hmm.
I cut it because I didn't know. I don't think that's very interesting for most people. But on the shop side, how much I don't know, turbulence comes with moving locations?
Well, if we're moving to like a decent sized steel building, not so much. If we're trying to fit things into different bedrooms and get out of people, you know, and then maybe have like a little temporary building or a shed, then more.
Yeah. But like we you don't fulfill a lot of, like, you don't fulfill anything direct to people out of the warehouse, right?
We do. So okay. Rogue's Taverns come from there.
Oh,
because they're in their own box. Card Targets, because they're in their own box. Rogue's Arenas. And then Rogue's Rings from this past weekend, because they were etched while the sale was going on. They were being etched. Yeah. So,
and those get etched in town, so you can you can get them pretty quick.
But we sent out, I think, between yesterday and today, like 125 between those products.
Oh, okay, wow, yeah.
So, you know, the taverns and the arenas are, and the targets are big products. So, yeah. We're getting through it all. I think we'll have everything fulfilled for Christmas. There's a couple of surprises that we'll have to sort through, but we have a thing with our fulfillment center where inventory is not necessarily reserved for an order when it comes in.
Oh,
and so an order that comes in after it could kind of steal what was ordered there.
Huh.
So it's really important to have our quantities like set up properly in Shopify, so no one can order something that someone else should be getting, but because their order has no back ordered items, will go right through. So that's a surprise that just showed up, but I think we'll be all right.
Let me ask you this, because it's I don't know how long it's been now, but we've switched fulfillment suppliers, right?
Yeah, they're now across town instead of across the country.
Right. How is that, like, both the transition and like getting settled in with the new company?
Well, what's really great about them is that we can get on the phone and talk to them, which we couldn't do with our previous fulfillment center. It was all email.
Yeah.
And so you would have an issue and it would be the next day or the day after that it got resolved, whereas now you can resolve things faster. These guys will also do on-demand screen printing. So
right. I think we've talked about that in about the Modern Rogue shirts and stuff
right.
going forward.
All except for a few certain sizes were printed at our new place. Mm-hmm. Anybody who ordered a regular Modern Rogue t-shirt over this past weekend, it will be on demand printed there. Unless it was existing inventory. But the difference is, like, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when you have a fulfillment center, you have to charge some shipping.
Right.
You know, and that shipping does include handling fees. So, you know, it's industry standard to have like a flat fee per shipment, to have a pick fee for every time they take
things.
One item off the shelf and put it into the box.
Right.
That's a fee. The cost of any packaging that goes inside the box itself, if it's going international, there would be like a separate fee for that. You know, so by the time it's all said and done,
all that stuff does add up.
Right. Because every now and then people will go, hey, you know, and this thing is, you know, 2 pounds. The 2 pound priority mail rate is, you know, $9.98. You know, why is the shipping, you know, $13.99?
Because like, someone has to pick it and get it all ready to ship out. Yeah.
Just sneak it in a media mail.
Right.
But they'll never know.
And that's another thing, too, is we can't. And our new fulfillment center doesn't like to cut those types of corners. so like for customs declarations, we try to declare things at like the value that they would be at their lowest price on the store.
Right.
So that people, because if you ship something to like Great Britain or the UK right now,
they have a VAT.
There's
tax.
A VAT tax, right? And it's like 20%. So somebody bought something that was $200, they're going to pay $40 just to receive it.
Right.
Which is
significant.
Significant, yeah.
Right. Especially
Plus,
in an
on
age.
On top of the shipping cost that they paid to get it over there in the first place. Yeah.
You know, that's something where I think Amazon has really shifted people's expectations of shipping very much.
Right.
Only because they were able to consolidate and be kind of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that that's no small hurdle for a store this size.
Sure. And I think everybody does think that like that because there is the Amazon model that other people could fit into that, but you know
the only way to do that is to give Amazon
scale.
A cut or
well right like
join the Amazon system.
Well, we might pay 30 cents for a box this size, whereas Amazon's probably paying 5 cents for that same box.
Right.
You know,
multiply that by every order and every bit in that order.
Mm-hmm.
That all of those efficiencies add up.
Right, and then you know our fulfillment center has real people that go take things out of the warehouse and put them into a box, whereas Amazon has largely automated that. So
they have those robots. Yeah. There was a commercial. We watched a commercial in the Night Attack after show yesterday of it was like some Amazon commercial that the joke was that they had replaced it with music from Captain America Winter Soldier. And so it seemed super creepy and all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like you saw a video of them with their like their automated robots and just their those like pallet towers that just move around on their own.
Yeah.
It's creepy, man. It's kind of creepy to see all that stuff automated.
2019, 19 products, 2020, all robots.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
100% robotic.
Super quick note, since it was kind of tangentially brought up, any updates on Q3 shirts for patrons?
Good question. The shirts that we had in the specific sizes that we had that we couldn't get done at Amplifier for the t-shirt promotion that have taken forever to fulfill to those 30 people. Actually, I think it's fewer than that. I think it's like 30 shirts to like 20 people. But those, I've been told, are now on their way to us. And so now is the time that we can place the order for the new shirts. Mm. So... but then we'll just have to stay, you know, kind of on our printer up there to get them done.
To those sizes.
Quickly. So I would say hopefully because they're all the same shirt, it will go a lot faster. So I'm optimistic that by the next bazaar briefing, we should be able to start telling people that they'll be that they'll start to be fulfilled.
All right.
Okay.
Quarter four designs are coming together, but not totally there.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
I have been seeing you've been posting like some screenshots in the Modern Rogue Discord, the Patreon exclusive Discord.
Right.
And it was only like when you posted that second one that I had kind of an inkling of what it even was.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if I show the folks?
Sure. I've actually got an updated image for you.
Okay.
However you want me to.
Do you want to post it in the Discord and then people can go there also if they'd like to see it?
Oh, yes, the Discord.
If you go to patreon.com/modernrogue, if you are a subscriber at the $5 a month level, you get automatic access to the exclusive Patreon
community Discord. Ideas.
And community ideas is where he posted it. Open original. Yes. Fine. Opening this imager link here. Okay. Oh, okay. I'm starting to see. So it's Brian doing his like Swami look from the skit.
Yep. And you scroll down, you got big old Jason face.
Okay. Very cool.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm playing around with it for a bit and I'm seeing what works.
Nice. I'd like to think that I'm sure this color palette is probably not final, but I'd like to think that this is just this. We'll just slap this on like a white shirt. This is kind of like grungy look.
Yeah, I started in that color palette because that's kind of Jason's sludge monster color palette.
It's very snotty.
It is, but I also kind of like it that way now that it's been like that for a little while. I mean, our quarter three shirt is like on this really vibrant, like blue base. So it's like, what if we put a little bit more color into it? I don't know if it'll stay that. I'll probably play around with a couple color palettes just to see what tickles my fancy. But yeah.
All right, a couple more topics here. We'll go through these. We'll kind of speed up a little bit. Brant, I heard that there were some updates with Modern Rogue captions and having an external service doing some of them.
Yeah.
How's that looking?
So good for the most part. So we started contracting out caption service, which is something I've wanted to do for such a long time because it's like a really important accessibility feature and also helps propagate the videos a little bit better and also helps people who are bilingual who want to provide captions. It's much easier for them to do translated captions if there's already a base English caption present with timings and everything. So it was something that I wanted to do for a long time, but it just takes so much time to do it manually.
Mm-hmm.
It takes like, you know, you do a 20-minute video, it'll take me 4 or 5 hours or something like that.
Right.
And when I just come off of an edit, that's such a huge time sink when I could be using that to do any given number of other things. So we started paying this service and it's like $1 per minute of video, which is pretty reasonable, but it does add up.
Right. Especially with some of these longer videos.
Yeah. But you know, the service, you can give them a couple of your preferences for formatting stuff, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I find that they generally do a pretty good job. I always have to go in and modify it a little bit just to make sure that there aren't any spelling errors or grammar errors, or like every now and then there's a couple like formatting things, like they always say "all right" as one word, whereas stylistically I do two words. Mm-hmm. Because that's the formal spelling of it. And then, you know, just a lot of little things like that that I have to go in and modify and correct. Yeah. But
use a properly formatted M dash?
I do.
Just do the dash dash thing.
It depends on the context. I sometimes do M dash. I sometimes do double dash. So I've actually got like a text file that is like all of my regular caption updates and M dash is in there in case I need to use it.
Mm.
And it's way easier for me to say, okay, I'm just going to watch through the episode once through and modify these little things than it is for me to go through and do it all by hand. Yeah. So it takes a 4 or 5 hour process down to an hour, maybe an hour and a half, mm-hmm. Which is nice. And so now every new video is going to have captions, and we're going to slowly fill in the back catalog. I've been kind of bouncing back and forth between recent videos and popular videos. Mm. So I'm kind of figuring that out. I just recently had them do the Iko Uwais and Sam Locke fight choreography video.
Yeah.
And I knew that that was like one of the more difficult videos, and there's a lot of a modification I have to do. That was one of their less acceptable entries, and it functions. It's much better than not having captions at all.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes Iko and Sam's accents, you can get a little bit lost in their words sometimes. So because I have the stems for the dialogue, I've heard them speak everything individually before, so I have a pretty good grasp of what they said when they said it. So I have to go in and say, okay, yeah, I know it sounds like they said this, but trust me, they said this. So I have to kind of go in and fine tune it a bit. Uh-huh. But yeah, I'm really excited to have a lot more closed captions on our videos.
Yeah. That'll be cool, especially if it means that it's easier for people to translate the captions. There's a channel I'd started watching recently of a Japanese YouTuber, and they speak in Japanese, which I only know a little bit of, but that person has a community of people who actually go in and like make English translations for different videos. So I've been able to go and like watch not the most recent stuff, but go back and see, I guess, more popular videos, mm-hmm. With good translations. So like it's a good feature, and I'm glad that we're making that more accessible.
Right. Truthview7 says that they're a little bit hard of hearing and use auto captions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I see that a lot. And I also wish, while we're on the topic of accessibility, Twitter has this great feature where you can provide descriptions for photos if you post photos. I really wish they allowed you to describe GIFs, but they don't.
Oh,
just not at all.
Huh.
Which is unfortunate because we post a fair amount of GIFs on the Twitter page.
I would probably guess that it's because they handle GIFs the way that they handle videos and not the way that they handle images.
Yeah, probably.
But
I'm super excited for it. And if people have seen my personal captions before, because I have captioned a good handful of our videos before, the formatting is a little bit different than how they are now through this service. But I'm mostly leaving things in this new format just because we're going to be dealing in such bulk that I don't want to have to go through and like really dig in there and adjust everything. But it's more or less similar. There are just a handful of differences here and there.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I'm glad you found a service that you seem to like, because I think we had tried another one that you were not too hot on.
Yeah, there are a couple of YouTube people who do captioning services that are really bad. And there was this one guy who reached out to us, and he was like, hey, I do captions for this, you know, YouTube person who you've maybe done a collaboration with before, and you know, similar rates. But they were like, hey, I submitted this caption to this video so that way you can see a sample of our work. And I was just really disappointed, like not any speaker identification or anything like that. And you know, just there are a lot of bad captions out there, and I'm happy to do my part to at least offer good captions where I can.
Nice. In other news, the Scam School channel, if you follow the Scam School channel, has kind of been a little wonky the past month or so. We haven't had any sort of new original Scam School footage since, when was this? This was posted a month ago.
Spooky.
Most everything has been compilations, or we actually put Brian's stage show all together in one video from when it's been recorded in the past. We actually just put up the TV pilots that we made for Science Channel last year in their entirety for free. So that's about all I can say on what mm-hmm. has been happening with that still. Though I know on Twitter, Brian was soliciting people for questions because I think we may try to do some type of mailbag type of video. We're trying out different things. We're trying out different things and seeing, like, I've been talking about it all year of like ways that we could change the channel mm-hmm. and ways that we can change the format. And so you're going to start to see both the fruits and the difficult decisions of having to do that in terms of just like, well, we may not have a lot of videos coming up in the next month as far as like the Scam School Avenue, but know that we are working on new videos and new types of things so that we can have even more videos in the future.
Yeah, and I think it's probably fair to characterize it as a transitional phase.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it is maybe not right now what it once was a couple months ago
right.
and not what it will be a couple months from now.
Exactly, right? Like, I think we're all pretty committed to trying to find a new, to finding a new format that works better for everyone so that we can have more videos and more clearer instruction and more engagement, especially on the community side. And so we're going to be working through that in the next few months. And that's probably more than I should have said already, but
I don't think it's becoming a column in a newspaper. Let's just tell people now.
I mean, say that, but
Brian really wants to have a magazine for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it.
So I mean, I think if anybody has been a diehard Scam School fan, they certainly have noticed that like the output has been weird lately, and it's gonna get weirder before it gets
less weird.
Less weird, right?
Fewer weird.
Fewer weird.
Fewer weird.
Excuse me. Fewer weird. Raziel TV asks, if you don't have new episodes incoming, why not use fan video compilations or something like that? Could be fun for new for viewers to send clips and easier for you. I mean, what I will say is that idea is an idea that we have thought about. So, if you're someone who is a magician and posts stuff on YouTube, there could possibly be an outlet for that for you on the channel going forward. This is not I'm not even teasing it. I'm at this point I'm describing literally describing stuff. But we're going to try to do a lot of stuff. So like OpenBody says do a clip show. We did four clip shows in a row,
right,
of compilations and stuff. And then I think part of my worry of like continuing to do stuff like that is that we don't have any of this messaging on the Scam School channel. We don't have anything telling people, hey, new stuff's going to happen. Hey,
right.
Just stay aboard. And so I worry about doing too much. Like I worry that we've already done too much of that now. And anyone who's only casually watching and doesn't engage would say, oh, so you're just done. I don't need to be following this anymore. The next thing that you're going to do is either going to be an ad or it's going to be old footage, and I've been watching for 10 years, so I'm thinking less of the channel, and that is the first step towards someone saying I'm going to unsubscribe.
Sure.
So I do worry about that. I do like the idea of the mailbag thing that Brian tweeted out is something that we've only been tossing around for a few days as part of this transitional phase. I think that that could be a good idea, and it's certainly something we'd like to do long term. But I also want to make sure that our next moves are something that clearly defines that the channel is not dead.
right,
and is going to be back in original content very soon. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. It's a big ship to turn around. Yeah. So
have fun.
Thank you.
Not my problem anymore.
So Razile TV says, so it's just a break, not an end. It's barely even a break.
We were on a break.
Good reference.
Yeah.
I once
super topical in 2018.
Once a thing that gets done needs to be done, we will talk about exactly what is going on. But
is that your hint that Scanskull is being taken over by David Schwimmer?
Oh no! Yeah.
Oh no! Oh, we just got goodness. Scooped.
We'll edit that out. They won't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that's gonna happen. Our last thing. It is holiday season, and I don't know how much stuff is necessarily going to be moved around because of it. I know that on the podcasting side, we will be having certain holiday scheduling considerations. So. For example, Night Attack will pretty much still have an episode every week, but some of those episodes may be pre-recorded or may be recorded on an earlier date. I know on Cord Killers, our the cord cutting show that we do, we will not have an episode on the 31st, and on the 24th we will have a pre-recorded edition of our yearly awards show, The Killies. Which is great, where just Tom, Brian, and I just talk about really good shows that we liked watching and are streaming now, which I think is a fun like way to use that holiday time on a cord cutting show like that, because you know there's not as much news and people are stuck with their families and don't know what to watch, or they just got a new device and they don't know how, you know, where anything is. So
sure,
that's kind of been the purpose of The Killies, and so this will be our third year doing it, so I'm excited for that. It's always fun, but we always like record it on a day when we don't have like an entire hour to do it, so we all build these lists, and then especially last year there was a lot of this like, oh, I'm gonna do two and before we move on to you, and I'm a pushover on that sort of stuff, so I didn't get to go through all my lists. So I'm gonna hopefully we'll schedule out where we can have enough time to do it. Scam School we've talked about. I think Remix will stay on schedule pretty much, and then whatever videos you see beyond that will just be kind of intermittent. They'll be out when they're out. Modern Rogues probably on track to be weekly still.
Yeah, I don't really get days off, so I guess I'll just work through the holidays.
I mean,
same.
That's what happened with Thanksgiving. Yeah. I was just like, well, I'm just gonna work all day.
Oh man, no. And then anything else? I think everything else will be pretty much. We'll be on its normal schedule. Are you guys doing any holiday travel as we kind of go into off topic stuff?
Well, not too far.
Okay. Mm.
Just around Texas.
Okay. Ooh, very coy. All right. Ooh. Brant, you going home to see the family? See the folks?
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Maybe. I will be gone. I'll be going home to Virginia for about a week. It's a Sunday to Sunday stretch. Hopefully I don't get stuck. It certainly won't be as long as I was gone last year, which was almost 2 weeks, especially when I got snowed in at Virginia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And was stuck there an extra like 2 or 3 days, which is like that was the pain of it all, was just like waiting 24 hours at a time and hoping I could get back home to back here to Austin.
That happened to me last year, too.
Oh, yeah?
Snowed in Boston.
Oh, geez.
But I got to the airport, and then I found out I'm going to have to spend the night in the airport.
Oh, that sucks. You would think Boston would be... Well, it was pretty bad last year.
Yeah.
So kind of nobody was really ready for it. Oh, yeah, and then American broke my luggage. I had to get new luggage. But they gave me a replacement bag that was, like, the same size. So that was not too bad. Hmm. So it'll be fun, but
it's just a Delta on the side of the new bag.
Right. Well, it was weird. It was like some brand I had never heard of. And they almost gave me like a smaller bag. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, is this, this is not even like the same, but they
a Simpsonite bag.
Is a Family Guy bag. Mm-hmm. But it's weird to think that just like at any flight counter, they have like backup bags mm-hmm. of a bunch of different sizes.
American Dad Airlines.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah. It was really good about 10 years ago, but then they got bought out by TBS Airlines and they're not as good anymore. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. Any other off topic stuff? What's going on with you guys, Brant?
I recently watched that Sabrina show on Netflix and they shoot it with anamorphic lenses.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought
you got
that
the
was
itch?
I've had the itch for years. Desperately want anamorphic lenses. but it's like, so like every year or so I look back into it to be like, okay, how viable would it be?
Yeah.
And there's three options for getting into anamorphic lenses. First one is like a custom aperture filter, which is basically it's like a black screen with a tall oval cutout. Mm-hmm. And basically all it does is it changes your bokeh to tall ovals.
Right.
So it
doesn't actually affect your shooting. It just like changes the depth of field look.
Yeah. It's kind of gimmicky.
Yeah.
And
I've seen that you can make those. I mean, you could just make those out of like cardboard paper.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can make like a star or something, and then all of your bokeh is stars.
Right.
And so that's kind of a fun little thing, but not really what I'm looking for. And then you can get what are basically like anamorphic projector lenses. And they're these old, heavy metal lenses, that you literally screw onto the end of a normal lens. Those are like $800 to $1,000. And they're really tricky because you have to dual focus, which means in order to set up the shot, you have to focus your lens and then focus the anamorphic lens and get them both on the same plane of focus to work properly.
Gosh.
And also those lenses can have different squeeze factors, so they can either horizontally compress the image 2 times or 1.3 times. I think there are a couple different other sizes, but those are the two big ones. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, if you wanted to go like for the real stuff, you're looking at, you can get a real anamorphic lens, but those are like $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. So, you know, you're looking at orders of magnitude here, but then if you use that, then it would look proper and you'd have aperture control and you'd have just a single focus. So one of these days I'll probably get one of those projector lenses and do the whole kind of goofy approach to it.
Yeah.
But I just, there's just something about,
touching your mic, please.
I've got to get it right. if I could shoot Modern Rogue in anamorphic, I would in a heartbeat, and everybody would hate it. I guarantee you. Everybody would say, why are you doing this? This doesn't make any sense. And I would love every second of it. It's just a real weakness of mine. But one of these days, I'll get one for my camera and then just take a bunch of anamorphic photos and video and stuff. Because it just like, you just can't beat the look. It just looks unlike anything else, really. And I guess a very quick overview for people who don't know what anamorphic is. It's basically a normal lens, but it is distorted in such a way that it horizontally compresses everything. Mm-hmm. So when you shoot the footage, everything looks really tall and stretched out and weird.
Right.
And in post-processing, you stretch it back out and you get like a really native widescreen format. Mm-hmm. And so that way everything's back to its appropriate ratios. But you, one of the nice things about it is that you get the depth of field of a really telephoto lens. So you get a really nice depth of field, but you get a really wide angle of view. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, just if you're unfamiliar with how anamorphic lenses look, just go look it up. It's really cool. Tons of films are shot anamorphic. Nice. So I just kind of looked through that. Also, last bit, today, the Bill Duran patron interview is going to go public. We're going to unlock that on the Scam Stuff channel.
Nice. YouTube.com/scamstuff. It'll probably be live by the time you're hearing this.
Probably. And so those are typically reserved for $10 patrons, but every once in a while we'll unlock a patron exclusive. So that way people can get an idea of, you know, what they're in for. Mm-hmm. And so that's like one of our longer guest interviews. That's a 35 minute interview or so.
Nice.
We have two interviews that we haven't given to patrons yet, 'cause I haven't edited yet, but we've got one with Shannon Morse, who we're going to have an episode with this week. And then we're going to have a couple more episodes with at some point soon. Mm-hmm. And then we have a guest interview with Evan and Caitlin, who we also still have episodes for that we haven't released.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. David, you been up to anything lately?
Nope.
Nope. Nothing.
I would recommend people watch I'm Sorry on Netflix.
Is that?
It's like, I think Andy Samberg might be one of the producers. What's her name? Andrea Savage, the comedian. So here's the thing about I'm Sorry. You look at the thumbnail as you're scrolling through Netflix and you're like, I don't think I need to see this show. Just based on the thumbnail. If you're going to judge it, a book by its cover. But then it's a great funny show, I think.
Hmm. Okay. So, very cool.
Check it out. I'm Sorry. And if you don't like it, well, I'm sorry. Nice. That's what I did.
Nice.
I've been going back and rewatching Futurama. They have Futurama on Hulu. Yeah. A lot of people know like Futurama was canceled and then they made those movies and then it came back on Comedy Central. Do you know that the last episode that they made for Fox before they were canceled, do you know which one it was?
I don't remember.
It was the Devil's Hands Holophoner episode. That really good one with like the really big musical number at the end.
Uh-huh.
Like that was it.
Wow.
So I'm going through the movies now. The movies were okay. I will be I'm interested to see if the Comedy Central seasons hold up, because I don't think I liked them at all. I don't think that they were very good. For the same reason that I think Disenchanted, the new Matt Groening Netflix series, is like not great in that it's like reverse the script, right? It used to be like, here's a modern man in the future. And so we're doing ideas about the future with like jokes about modernity. And at some point it turned into like jokes about modern times in the backdrop of futures in the future. Mm. And so it just like, there's a weird detachment to that sort of way of writing that I think I didn't like, but we'll see.
To the Disenchanted?
Both Disenchanted and those last couple seasons of Futurama.
I didn't make it through the first episode of Disenchanted. I was like,
Disenchanted's like, okay. I also think that like, Netflix has whoever is doing like trailers and stuff for Netflix, I don't think that they make good trailers. I think about half the time they don't make good trailers for stuff. Because I think you look at the one for Disenchanted and you're like, oh, this is going to be like a road trip through a medieval world, when it is very much just it's Futurama, but in the past.
Mm.
And so you get the idea of like, oh, we're going out and we're doing a lot of stuff, but actually it's all like kind of in one town. And it's a lot of, you know, it's very ensemble cast focus. So I don't know. I watched a few episodes, but I also haven't finished it.
I don't see many trailers these days.
Yeah.
Just kind of in general.
So you're saying they're like trashy trailers? Like they're like,
they are trash. Uh-huh. They're trailer trash.
Okay. There you go.
We got there.
I end up seeing a lot for Cord Killers because we feature trailers on that show. Right. Occasionally, so I about once a week I end up seeing. Netflix has got so much stuff coming out now.
Mm.
I mean, it is not a joke that they have a new show every week.
And they're like Anime Central now.
Big anime news! Right. Oh my goodness, they just got the first ever streaming rights to Evangelion coming next year, and then they're making a live action Cowboy Bebop, and They're doing a remake of Saint Seiya, and they're getting a lot of. Netflix has really been making strong pushes in anime the past couple of years.
Anime.
I hope that Cowboy Bebop is good. The Death Note movie that they made is no good. It's not. It might be like a good bad movie. Mm. It might be worth watching as a good bad movie, but it's not any good. It's not any good.
I watched it when it came out.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I wasn't offended by it, but I didn't love it. And I wasn't familiar with the source material.
Okay. I think I might have just finished rewatching or watching for the first time, I guess, the Death Note anime around the same time that I saw that movie. So it was pretty fresh in my mind, like how they, you know, readapted the story to take place in America with an American, and, which was not even the problem with that movie is like making adaptation changes. It's like, it's just, I don't know. It's mediocre, and it's not a good story to try to tell in an hour and a half, honestly. Like, you lose all the like mind games and the back and forth between Kira and L if you have to squeeze it into a movie. I don't know. Spin Dash says that they saw the Bleach one. Yeah, Netflix also did a live action Bleach, and he says it was probably on the same lines. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else, guys? Is that it?
Might be. Is
that it? No? Yeah. Plugs, Twitters, and Instagrams and stuff, David?
100% real.
100% real hair. Great. Got it. last month when you were gone, Brant took over the mantle. And
is that right?
Yeah.
We kept it going for you.
Real.
Gotta keep that seat warm.
I don't know who you're going to, but anyway. yeah, nope. I'm just hanging out right now. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Maybe if you Google David Rowan and see something in the past that I did that's worth looking at.
And check out scamstuff.com, of course. If you have
anything
with scam stuff, is it scamstuffstore@gmail.com? Is that, the support email?
Yeah. I think we should go to like a domain email. We should probably lose that Gmail.
I guess. Like, Gmail's fine.
But we'd have to figure out what comes before
help. Yeah, the scam stuff.
Right, but I don't want it to be with something that like spam filters will just get off the bat.
Well, and you can like, you can get like the G Suite for domains, but then you like are paying like $5 a month or something for Google email software, basically. I don't know. It's something to look into, but Gmail works just as fine. We have a Gmail domain email for the Night Attack email, and it's like going back into. I'm not going to show it on screen. But
the webmail.
It's like a it's, version of it? Yeah, right. It's a webmail thing.
Oh yeah,
it's like
time traveling.
Yeah, it's definitely like some of these are in plain text. Some of these have rich text. Ooh, I need to look back at that email.
Kind of like old school Hotmail.
A little bit.
Or old school Yahoo.
Yeah.
Can in the warehouse, can you just have like speakers set up in every room so that way when you get an email, it's just like blaring loud, like, you've got mail.
And then the door closes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Brant, anything you want to plug? Just the Twitters?
Yeah, just the usual stuff. Twitter.com/Gatowag. That's GATOWAG. Also Instagram. I've been posting some photos there as long as some music recommendations. Twitch.tv/Gatowag. I don't stream there often, but every once in a while I will. And that probably somewhere else, but okay. Those are the big ones.
Nice. You can follow me on Twitter @BrightCasby, RYCAS. I am working on a new project that might actually be out before the next episode of the show. So make sure you follow me and join the bandwagon on it, because I think it'll be a cool thing. I've done a little bit of it already, and it seems really cool. But I want it to launch with a lot of stuff. So follow me on Twitter, BrightCasby, RYCAS. I also do a lot of streaming here on Twitch, twitch.tv/nightattack, which is where we do this show, which is called The Bizarre Briefing. If you want more information, past episodes, time codes, all the good links, go to bizarrebriefing.com or find the show on youtube.com/scamstuff. That's where we have the video version of the show. We record the show at the end of the month, pretty much, more or less. And we do it once a month. So thank you guys for a fantastic November 2018.
Super. Oh, I'm also on Spotify. And I have 5 followers, which is a lot for Spotify.
Oh, nice. Right. Is that
a respectable amount of followers on Spotify.
Yeah. Is that David Rowan?
Yeah, it is.
There you go. Look it up. Find his stuff.
Did I skew your recommendations the other day?
No, I think the private session worked.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Oh, were you playing stuff at the warehouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, when we did the packing day.
I was like, my Discover Weekly is going to be crazy.
All right. We'll see you guys next month.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.